Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
The New Statesman.
Keir Starmer is the man poised to be the next leader of the United Kingdom. But he's also a man of whom many, including those in his own party, have asked, what does he stand for? 4 years after Starmer became leader of the Labour Party, we know a little bit more about him. We've heard about his childhood, the Pebble Dash semi, and his time at the Crown Prosecution Service. But what are the principles behind the man and his project? What do we really know about Starmerism? Hello, I'm Freddie Hayward, political correspondent at The New Statesman, and you're listening to The New Statesman podcast. Joining me in the studio, I have senior editor George Eaton, who has written this week's cover story, What is Starmerism? You can buy the issue on the newsstands, depending on when you're listening to this, and you can also read George's article online via the link in the show notes. So George, tell me about the piece. What are you saying? What's the purpose of it?
So the purpose of it is that I think there's a much better understanding now of Starmer the man than there was before. His ambition, his ruthlessness, his complicated upbringing. But a question that a lot of people still ask me and ask generally in Westminster is, what is Starmerism? Now, that's partly because Starmer himself tends to avoid abstract language and concepts. He doesn't particularly, he isn't particularly attached to the idea of having a vision. So I make the contrast with Ed Miliband, who is perhaps a more obviously cerebral figure who made speeches on responsible capitalism and pre-distribution. Starmer very much avoids language like that. And because
quite apolitical almost, isn't he? Yeah,
exactly. I mean, because he came to politics quite late as well, entered Parliament at the age of 52. Obviously, background as a human rights lawyer and head of the Crown Prosecution Service, that gives him a practical, almost managerial approach to politics. So focused on fixing the operation of government rather than big ideas. But I think if you put all of that aside, there are some very interesting intellectual currents, and I identify three in the piece. I think there's one focused on ethics, which I define as the common good. I think there's one focused on economics, securonomics, that's Rachel Reeves's term. And I think there's one emerging on geopolitics, which is progressive realism, David Lammy's term.
Let's start with the common good. What is that? Tell me about that.
Yes. So rereading Keir Starmer's conference speeches, his other major addresses, one of the things that struck me was the phrase, the dignity of work, which he uses several times. That reminded me of Michael Sandel's book of a few years ago called The Tyranny of Merit, What Became of the Common Good. So this is the Harvard philosopher, world-renowned scholar. And he writes in that book about how the concept of the dignity of work can reinvigorate politics, give it a moral dimension. Now, in Keir Starmer's case, he often refers to his toolmaker father and the understanding that gave him of the dignity work. He very much emphasizes this didn't come from a sort of political seminar. But I think that emphasis on work, and he says the sort of foundation of my politics, what I believe to be good is family and work, gives Starmerism quite a communitarian feel. Mm. And it's very different to the sort of free market right, which very much thinks of sort of sovereign individuals, you know, that in terms of Sunak's approach to politics. And I think it's also distinctive from New Labour. New Labour almost approached politics in through a post-class lens. Mm. So, you know, Tony Blair said, I want to make you all middle class. And Starmerism, there's an earthier quality to it. in terms of class, but also that communitarian streak where Starmer will talk about family, community, nation. And in recent decades, these have been terms associated with the conservative right. But Sandel, who I interviewed for the piece, says the left shouldn't allow the right to have a monopoly on these themes. It should engage with them and its own traditions of solidarity, reciprocity, community. So I think if you put all that together, that's quite a distinctive ethical streak. And I think that is the right term for it, because it's distinct from policy, economic policy, or your policy on public services, your policy on tax. It is about what you think defines a good life and what you value.
Yeah, and we see this in his language about football. We see it in his recent video on about St. George's Day. He's very happy to embrace and speak to the national story as he sees it. I mean, but how do we see it manifest in practical terms? And, you know, your piece is very much about the ideas behind it. But we've seen some threads of this drip through into their policy on workers' rights, for instance.
Yes. So it was very interesting. When I interviewed Michael Sandel, and I said to him, you know, what do you think would be some good examples of the dignity of work in practice? Sort of unprompted, one of those he gave was protections for gig economy workers and collective bargaining for care workers. This is obviously a massively under-resourced, underpaid sector. Now, both of those are part of Labour's New Deal for Working People. So that really sort of confirmed my intuition that there's an ethical pillar, and then there's the question of how that translates into economics. Mm. And, you know, Michael Sandel himself is saying that those are the policies that I would adopt. And clearly, for Keir Starmer, you know, his commitment to stronger workers' rights is very much informed by his family background, what he believes to be good. And again, I think that marks a break with New Labour. You know, Tony Blair, before the 97 election, said we will maintain the toughest trade union laws in the Western world. You know, Keir Starmer has promised to level up workers' rights in a way that hasn't been attempted for decades.
And you mentioned the economy there. Let's move on to the second pillar, Securonomics. Mm. It's slightly more practical. It's Rachel Reeves's theory about how she wants to approach the economy. And she delivered this long, quite detailed, academic almost speech at during her May's lecture, which we were both at. Tell us about that.
Yes. So I think, I mean, Securonomics, which is the term that she coined, it was about a year ago or so. Our editor, Jason Cowley, wrote a long profile of her for the magazine at that time. What I think is significant about it is that it represents a sort of rejection of some of the economic assumptions of the Blair-Clinton era. So, you know, Bill Clinton said the age of big government is over. Tony Blair said if you want to debate globalization, you may as well debate whether summer follows spring. And it sort of accepted this idea that the state is no longer a leading economic actor. It will run public services, but otherwise it should just get out of the way. Securonomics asserts that, you know, in this new era of insecurity, the state has to intervene to protect your living standards, to ensure security for citizens, and also for growth. You know, Reeves looks at the world and sees the US, the EU, China, all pursuing quite statist policies on green industry, for instance. And I think, look, the UK can't just be a bystander. We need our own version of that. So that's what I think sort of sums up Securonomics. And I speak to the Harvard economist Danny Roderick for the piece. He was an early critic of what he calls hyper-globalization. Reeves has cited him. But I also think this fits with Starmer's own thinking and agenda. You know, in many ways, Securonomics is Reeves's term, and she's owned that idea through the Mace lecture, as you say. But it's a good fit for Starmer's ideas on class. And he is a Labour politician who comes from that more statist tradition. You know, he doesn't have reservations about it. Yes, I mean, one interesting example is that when he's been travelling around the country and meeting clean energy workers, he speaks about them almost sort of pulling on the England shirt when they go to work, powering a nation in the way that miners once did. Their work's become a kind of patriotic duty. He says they have a sense that it's not just another job, that these are the industries of the future, that Britain relies on this for its power in the future. And there, I think, again, you see those sort of communitarian values fusing with the economics.
After the break, we'll be asking whether Keir Starmer is the heir to Boris Johnson. If you're subscribed to The New Statesman, you can get all of our episodes ad-free on the New Statesman app. You can get it both on iOS and Android. Just search for The New Statesman on the App Store or Google Play Store. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
And George, tell us about the third pillar. What's left?
Yes. So I think, as I say, politics does not stop at the border. Yeah. And that's why you do need a sort of Starmerism in the world. And I think you've started to see that emerge with what the Shadow Foreign Secretary David Lammy calls progressive realism. This is an idea that he first elaborated in his Fabian Society speech at the start of the year. It's influenced by his new political advisor, Ben Judah, the author of This Is London and This Is Europe. And I think there are two things that are distinctive about that. So Lammy sees it as combining two Labour traditions. The realism of Ernest Bevin, who was Clement Attlee's foreign secretary, helped found NATO, the nuclear deterrent, and the idealism of Robin Cook, who was Tony Blair's first foreign secretary and spoke about foreign policy with an ethical dimension. What does he mean by fusing the two? So he says it's about pursuing realist means for progressive ends. Now, that means taking the world as it is, not being deluded about how much you can change, not pursuing a foreign policy that's, say, concerned only with human rights promotion, but because that won't get you very far. So being hard-headed about diplomacy with China, diplomacy with the Gulf states, but to achieve progressive outcomes. So he gives the example to me of cooperating with China on climate change, regulation of AI. He recognises that if there's ever to be peace in the Middle East, then the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, will be central to that. You can't simply declare Saudi Arabia a pariah and have no relationship with them. And I think that's a good fit for Keir Starmer, because Starmer, as a human rights lawyer and as director of public prosecutions, is similarly someone who took a pragmatic approach of engagement. He was involved with the Northern Irish Policing Board. It was a role there as an advisor that some of his friends on the liberal left may have been skeptical of, saying, you know, why are you involved with the successor organization to the sort of sectarian RUC? But actually, that police force ended up with a better human rights record than others, and it helped promote a more progressive politics in Northern Ireland. So there's an example of sort of realist engagement and a progressive outcome.
Yeah, so I suppose with just on the progressive realist lens, Lammy's trying to fuse two things here. And I think those traditionally would be in tension. You know, you have a realistic appraisal both of your own power, but also you adopt a realism in terms of, you know, international relations, as in you try and protect the interest of your state. Then at some point you're going to have to sacrifice the progressive ends, whether that's on climate change or human rights. What I took from that, from this essay that David Lammy did for Foreign Affairs this month or last month, which was his largest exposition of this theory so far, was this sort of latent recognition of Britain's decline. And I think he draws your attention to, at the start, the fact that in 97, Britain had an economy bigger than India and China's combined. And obviously that's now not the case. So that was the thread that I think sort of went through that piece. And I think that's the realism. You know, there's a realistic appraisal of what we can actually do in the world. But this sort of gets to my key question for you, George, about the piece. It seems to me that all of these three pillars, as you set them out, are in many ways they're much more diagnoses of problems in society. We've got the common good, which seems to me to be a recognition that many people feel as if they're living in this sort of atomized, hollowed out country where there's social fabric over the years has been depleted, and we need to, you know, re-inject some sense of community and national pride. I can't yet see a solution to that problem. I think it's the right diagnosis. And then similarly on the Securenomics, I think Rachel Reeves and her team can recognise that protectionism's on the rise. We've seen that since Donald Trump came into power in 2016. And Joe Biden has not had a completely different China policy, for instance, than Donald Trump. And we're going to see that go forwards. I think there is recognition that globalization, although it's not, you know, it's not gone in any sense, it's changed. And then we are going to see greater trade wars. Again, it seems to be a description of what we're going, what's happening, rather than a prescription for the economy and how she wants to change the economic framework. I mean, we've discussed on the podcast so many times how Rachel Reeves, in many ways, has accepted some of the core precepts or economic precepts of the past 13 years, such as those fiscal rules, such as the power of the OBR. And then, as I said, I can see a sort of similar pattern with David Lammy. It's a recognition, it's a diagnosis. What would you say to that?
This is a good challenge because I deliberately took quite an abstract approach to this piece because I really wanted to delve into the ideas because I think that's important, particularly when it's a project in opposition. You know, we're not in Labour is not in government yet. And so I did deliberately came at it from quite a philosophical angle. But I think there are concrete policies that you can see. I've already cited one, obviously, on the New Deal for working people. Now, obviously, there's ongoing debate about whether that's being watered down. I think some of this is simply looking at how it's sensible or practical to introduce some of those ideas. But the idea it's sort of been junked or gutted is wrong. You're still going to see
it. They've always said there's going to be a consultation.
Yes. I mean,
there are broader questions.
I mean, if people think consulting on policy isn't a good idea, then they'll soon that they wouldn't get very far in government. But on Securenomics, we should probably talk a bit about public ownership because I also think that's an important feature of it. That's very much an agenda that's obviously been driven by Ed Miliband on energy, with the launch of GB Energy. You saw it last week with Louise Hague, the Shadow Transport Secretary, and fleshing out Labour's vision for a publicly owned railway system. Rachel Reeves obviously talks about a national wealth fund. Now, that again is a step change from New Labour because it's recognising that public ownership has a legitimate role to play as a tool to promote growth and economic resilience. That's very different from, say, New Labour nationalising Northern Rock or the Conservatives taking bankrupt railway contractors into public ownership. That's public ownership purely as a sort of emergency mechanism. This is public ownership as a sort of proactive step. Then finally, on progressive realism, I think there are some concrete examples that you can highlight. So David Lammy talks up a defence and security pact with the EU.
Yeah.
Now, that sounds as if it's just replicating NATO, but it's deeper than that. He sees that as a vehicle for a whole range of agreements on climate change, migration, critical raw materials, and that then intersects with Securenomics. So it's a recognition that economic policy doesn't end at the border. He gave the example to me of the raw materials you need for an electric vehicle. Where does the lithium come from? Where does the cobalt come from? There's a role for the foreign secretary to play there in unlocking trade deals, in ensuring that Britain has the economic resources it needs. He sees that as sort of Securenomics on a global level. So I think, as I try to flesh out in the piece, the key thing is not to see these sort of pillars in isolation from each other, but the interactions between them.
And that's why it's a project in itself. You mentioned New Labour. I mean, one of the classic accusations thrown at Keir Starmer is that he is a Blairite in new clothes, and he's going to try and adopt or instill Blairite principles into the party through his advisors and through his grip over the left in the party. So, what would you say to them? I mean, are there any parallels between New Labour and the Starmerite project that you've identified?
So there's a very obvious parallel in that New Labour won 3 elections.
Yeah.
Tony Blair was the last Labour leader to win an election, to state the obvious. So it's not surprising that the party will try and draw lessons from that. It's not surprising that it's looking at New Labour's communication techniques. I mean, message discipline is generally a positive thing for political parties. And you do have some people from that era, you know, Pat McFadden, perhaps most obviously, is a Labour's campaign coordinator. Matthew Doyle, Keir Starmer's director of communications, a former Blair aide. And of course, you're going to draw on the experience of people who were in government the last time Labour won. But I think there's sometimes a confusion of that with the policy agenda in terms of, I think that can send people down the wrong track because, as I argue, I think Starmerism is distinct from the New Labour project. Now, that's partly because of Keir Starmer himself, the kind of politician he is, the kind of values he has, but it's also just a recognition of how the world's changed.
Yeah.
You know, the state has really come back as an economic agent because of climate crisis,
COVID,
post-crash era, COVID, as you say, the return of great power conflict. So it's a recognition of the realities.
I mean, is it slightly more than that? We've seen, for instance, Wes Streeting has been very keen to impress on commentators and the public that he would happily introduce private sector ideals and market principles into the NHS to he would say just to bring down the waiting list. I suppose the difference there would perhaps be that he's not doing it because he reveres those principles per se. It's a pragmatic way in which he would bring down the waiting list. I also think it's just him trying to reassure the public that he's not some Corbynite socialist, and whether they actually do that in government's a slightly different question. We know that they're going to do a big NHS review, for instance, and that's where they're going to have their health policy come from. But it is interesting. I mean, you've got this same acceptance, I would say, of some of the key parameters of politics. You know, I think, again, I'd say that the key one is the fiscal rules, and you've got this desire to reassure the public both over national security and on the public finances. There was a thread through Blair. You saw, for instance, the first 2 years of the Blair government, they said they would stick to Tory spending plans. I mean, there is an overlap, isn't there, in some form?
Yes, I think that's a good point. And I think, again, that's born of the view that, you know, to win elections, Labour has to reassure sceptical voters on the economy and on national security. And also, I think, reassure voters that they don't simply see public services as empty buckets that you just fill with money without ever worrying about how you reform or run them. And not simply being focused on the interests of public sector workers, but the interests of the public and users of public services too. And you're right, some of that is quite Blair-esque. Now, I think Keir Starmer is a pragmatic politician, and some of that agenda on public service reform, I think, is a recognition that the economy is not growing at the level it was in the 1990s. So how do you get better outcomes? I think you have to be serious about public service reform. Now, there are all sorts of debates we could have about what shape that takes, but I don't think it's sort of sustainable or credible for the centre-left not to engage with the reform question and simply to say we think public services need more money. Now, one thought is whether there is a fourth pillar I could add on public services. Now, I don't think there's yet a sort of philosophical, intellectual shorthand that you could use for Labour's agenda across public services. But you're absolutely right. It's an area to watch, not just Wes Streeting in health, but someone like Peter Kyle, Shadow Science and Technology Secretary, also a great champion of public service reform and the role technology plays. Yeah.
We're talking a little bit about the ideas that are shaping politics right now. And there has been this talk about a new consensus coming in, a consensus that was perhaps brought in because of COVID, the 2016 Brexit vote, a recognition that people are angry about immigration or the speed with which culture and the country is changing, which makes me wonder to what extent you think this project, these ideas, are distinct from some of the things that the Tories are saying. Because we do see threads, you know. I think one of the key or notable things about Westminster now is the consensus around the problems that the country faces. You know, it's often hard to discern what the Tories are saying because there's so much noise. But, you know, you'll often see them talk about this, you know, a bloated state that maybe does need to interfere a little bit more, but we probably do need some more public sector reform. And, yeah, immigration needs to fall a bit. Keir Starmer said that. He said that at the CBI. So I do think they are coalescing around some ideas or some problems. I mean, to what extent would you say that they are similar? Is there a new consensus between the two?
Well, I think at one point it did look as if Labour and the Conservatives were going to alight on quite similar territory. Yeah. And that would have been almost exactly 3 years ago, when the Conservatives under Boris Johnson had a good set of local election results, won the Hartlepool by-election, and people were talking about Boris Johnson serving a decade in power and of pursuing the levelling up project and industrial strategy. And you'd had Ben Houchen win that big victory. And
more money for the NHS.
Yes.
More public investment.
Yes. I mean, at that point, it did look as if it was going to become a bit of a fight over who can deliver levelling up in the most efficient and popular way, rather than whether it's a good project. I think you've seen that obviously change because you had Liz Truss, who's a sort of ideological free marketeer, and then Rishi Sunak, who's much more pragmatic than Liz Truss, but still also is clinging to what you might see as a rather outdated free market vision of the world. Mm. He's made a very clear choice in terms of if there are spare resources, he will focus them on tax cuts rather than on more money for public services. If you listen to the answers that Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves give when they're asked about more money for public services, it's very clear that they would see more money for the NHS schools as a bigger priority than, say, abolishing national insurance or even just cutting it further. They've accepted the Tories' tax cuts for pragmatic reasons because of the cost of living crisis and because they don't want to hand the Tories a political attack line. But I don't think anyone thinks that Labour's going to come into office and that they'll be getting out of bed in the morning because they want to reduce taxes. Whereas you do get the sense, you know, Rishi Sunak gets really excited about tax cuts, free ports, deregulation. It's when he shows sort of political passion. What drives Starmer and Reeves, I think, is the idea of higher living standards for workers and of restoring a decade of national renewal, as they call it. Now, I think, as I say, the question really is not whether sort of Starmerism exists or whether there isn't a distinctive Labour agenda, but whether it will work because of the big economic and social problems that they'll inherit, and also because it's a very tough time to be in government. And I reference, obviously, Joe Biden in the US, Olaf Scholz in Germany, and Anthony Albanese in Australia as other centre-left leaders in office who are pursuing quite a similar path to Starmer in terms of emphasising class and the dignity of work, have moved on from the third way associated with Blair and Clinton, but all of whom are having problems in office. You know, Joe Biden might be defeated by Donald Trump. Olaf Scholz, the Social Democrats, are polling behind the hard right alternative to Germany. And in Australia, Labour may not win a second term. So.
And just on the Conservatives and whether this consensus is forming, I remember writing a piece maybe a year or so ago which argued that Keir Starmer was the heir to Boris Johnson. I mean, is there some truth in that? That we had this, as you described, this coalescing around some of the ideas, levelling up and economic reform and, you know, pride in nation, these sort of things. And Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer weren't too far apart. The Tory party then went into this sort of free market spiral with Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak's picking up the pieces. I mean, what do you think, George? Mm. Is he the new Boris Johnson?
So I think on one level, that comparison is absurd because there are a few more politicians that Keir Starmer has greater contempt for than Boris Johnson. You really felt that when they were clashing at PMQs. He has a sort of visceral loathing as Boris Johnson as a sort of frivolous huckster who broke the rules, and you know, Keir Starmer is very much someone who likes to play by the rules and has sort of contempt for people like Boris Johnson who don't. But if you mean, is he the sort of inheritor of that aspiration for national renewal and levelling up, which I think some tried to make Boris Johnson the vehicle for, it's not clear how much Boris Johnson ever really believed in that himself, then yes, he is, I think, the inheritor of the hopes and aspirations around that. Because I think ever since the crash, there have been competing attempts by the left and the right to try and diagnose what's gone wrong with Britain. Mm. Because we're not in a great state. You know, average real wages are still below their 2008 level. Economic productivity's been terrible, among the worst performance in the G7. Public services are quite literally crumbling. Our infrastructure is shoddy and outdated.
Yeah.
And different tendencies on the right and left, whether it's, you know, the Red Tories or Blue Labour or Milibandite Social Democrats or Corbynite Socialists have all grappled with these problems and offered sometimes overlapping solutions to them. But we haven't had a government that's actually tried to successfully pursue national renewal. So I think the question of whether Keir Starmer can do that is absolutely the right one to ask.
Thank you very much, George. Thanks so much for listening. If you'd like to submit a question for us to discuss on a future podcast, you can do so at newstatesman.com/youaskus. If you're listening on Spotify, just scroll down on the episode page and type your reply. Or if you're watching on YouTube, you can leave a question in the comments. You've been listening to the New Statesman podcast with me, Freddie Hayward, and my colleague, George Eaton. We'll be back on Thursday with the latest from This Week in Politics. This episode was produced by Catherine Hughes.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.